March 19th. And we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask Director Green to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Begin. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, can you call the roll, please?
Roll call, Director Amezcua. Director Bilodeau?
Present.
Director Green? Director Jung? Director Meeks? Director Nguyen? Director Sheldon?
Here.
Director Tran?
Here.
Director Wigan?
Here.
Director Yeo? Okay, you do have a quorum with six directors present.
Great. Mr. Acting General Manager, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Great. Now's the time for visitor participation. If anyone from the public would like to address us on items not listed on the agenda this evening that are within our jurisdiction. I see none in the room, and I see no one online, so we're going to move on. That brings us to item number one, which is a public hearing on the 2023-24 Engineer's Report on Groundwater Conditions, Water Supply, and Basin Utilization. And I will open the public hearing, and I will call upon the Acting General Manager to lead this item.
Thank you, President Bilodeau. The District Act requires that a public hearing be conducted on the Annual Engineer's Report, which analyzes groundwater conditions, water supply, and basin utilization. Section 26 of the Act specifically requires that certain information be provided to the Board in March of each year before the board considers levying the replenishment assessment in April. Chris Olson will provide the staff presentation on this item.
Thanks, Jason. Good evening, President Bilodeau, members of the board. So, yeah, as Jason said, the District Act requires that we present on the Annual Engineer's Report. And every year, the second board meeting in March, we present four key findings. Those include the change in groundwater levels, total groundwater production, annual basin storage chain, and the accumulated basin overdraft. And this is covering the fiscal year July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2024. We start off, we always look at the principal aquifer. These are the elevations that were measured and taken in June of 2024. This is a very typical looking contour map as in previous years. The blue line represents sea level. The green is higher elevations, and the red is lower elevations. Very typical, higher in the forebay, lower as it gets to the coast. Where we see the changes is when we look at the groundwater levels from year to year. And if we all recall that last fiscal year and the year before that were very heavy rain years. So we had very, very little change and just some increases. A lot of times this map shows a lot of decreases, but this year, because of the wet rain that we had, the wet year, we have higher levels and some basically no changes at all. Looking at the accumulative overdraft, in June of 24, it was measured at 133,000 acre feet. We've talked about this a few different times in the past couple of months of meetings. The projection based on average hydrology, well, we know this year is not going to be an average hydrology, but if it was, the projection was 121,000. We're probably going to be in that 160,000 acre foot range, which still is keeping us right in our target range of 150 to 200,000. So as I've said many a times, the basin's in great shape right now. When you look at the 23 to 24 fiscal year, comparing it to the previous, it was a 56,000 acre foot gain to the good. And then as we see the groundwater production on looking at the far right, it did increase up to 280,000 for that fiscal year. And that was increasing from the previous year. So we all know we were dealing with wells being down for PFAS and slowly ramping those up. But the groundwater production totaled 280,420 acre foot for 23-24 fiscal year. Something new that we're showing, because if we all remember, 23 to 24, we had a BEA discount of $200 an acre foot, similar to this fiscal year. And we did that because we wanted to encourage producers to pump more. But as you can see, we only had a handful of producers that could actually get above 85 to the 100% level, and a few more that were just slightly above 85. Granted, there's some on the far left that are still way down because of PFAS at this point in time and are back up. But the point is, not all producers can meet 85 or go above 85, whether it's lack of production wells, or maybe some of their zones are higher pressure zones that they can't get the water to for groundwater pumping. So we just want to point that out, that not everyone was able to take advantage of that BEA discount. When we're looking at total water demands, so total water demands were 350,290 acre feet, and that was the lowest in the past 51 years. And the previous fiscal year was very similar with water demands in that same general range. Now, when we're talking about what were those water sources to get to that level, it was 280,420 acre feet of groundwater. There was 51,154 of imported water, and then we had some San Diego Creek native water and some recycling water, all totaling that 350,290 acre feet of total water demand. Over the last 24 years, this graph shows you what the historic water demands are. And you can see the general gradual decline, and we're at that roughly 350,000 spot for the last couple of years. So that fiscal year was very wet. It was greater than 20 in the green. The average is just under 14, 13 and a half to 14 inches of rain. This is saying as of February 28th, but as of today, it's about 6 1/4 inches of rain is all we've had so far. So then looking for the future board action, second board meeting in April, it will be for considering setting the fiscal year 25-26, the BPP, the RA, the additional RA, the BEA, and the production limitation and surcharge. And then, so tonight, the recommendation is just to receive and file the 2023-24 engineer's report. Let me take any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. Are there any questions from the board? Yes, go ahead, please.
For the general decrease in water usage, is that dependent on how much rain we get? I mean, last year we got a lot of rain. People weren't watering their lawn as much.
Right. So if you're looking at this graph, there's been a general gradual decrease. But to your point, those last two fiscal years, very wet years. Sprinklers are not running in those fiscal years, right? So 20 plus inches of rain. So probably more so for that. But generally, we kind of think about 370,000 acre feet for total demand, but those years were around 350.
Okay, so next year when it's but goes up, it's
likely, yeah, right.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Well, now I will call upon any public speakers that would like to address us. This is a public hearing. Do we have any speaker cards? And is there anyone online that would like to address the board? Seeing none. It says now I have a script. The board holds discussion. Is anybody any discussion amongst the board on this item?
I do.
Oh, please.
And I have a general question or an issue here. That seems to be chronic or ongoing, personally. And in terms of strategic costs, supplies, and demands, there have always been reports that, you know, there have been over the years less usage of water for various reasons, including the volume of rainfall, but also policies from Sacramento and other water savings measures, if you will, that helps us decreases the amount of water that we use, whether commercially or at the residential level. The basic question that I have, and perhaps I'd like to pose for our colleagues here, our board here, members here, is that we have less demands, and yet somehow, and this may be a very simple, stupid question on my part, but I'd like to throw it out. Every year, the price of water has risen. And it doesn't seem to jive. And I understand that there are other costs and inflation and other issues related to the increase in costs. But in terms of supply and demand and how the market works, there should be some sort of a stabilization of costs, if not a reduction in costs for the consumers, for the ratepayers to pay. But we're not seeing that. I'm not sure if this is the right forum, well, the time to ask this question, but that's, I think, the main concern, if not me, but I know that many of my fiscal conservative colleagues on the board here are thinking about, but we can't seem to have that answer or address that issue in a very serious way, other than annually, you know, we get this increase or we get this proposed increase in the rates, and that concerns me. So rhetorically, that's the question.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point, and I think that what the staff would say is that the last 3 years, we have increased the replenishment assessment by 10% a year for 3 years. That's very steep. But that was in response to the PFAS crisis that we have in terms of building all these facilities. We've taken on hundreds of millions of dollars of debt as a result, and we have debt service payments to make. But the good news is I think we're over the hill now. This year, the RA is only going to go up 3% is what's projected. So I think the rate shock period is over for us, at least I hope so. And so I think that's the reason why, unfortunately, we've had to increase the rates such a great amount.
That may be the case, but I'd like to go all the way back, even prior to the PFAS fiasco, the PFAS crisis, that so-called crisis that we have. And to just take a look at the trend lines on how the rates are going even prior. Okay, if that is the case, and I have pretty little doubt that that is the case, because, as I said, other than inflation and the cost of living and everything else, there are other operative or variables. But yeah. What about prior to PFAS?
And I think prior to PFAS, when the board took on the challenge of building the GWRS system, you know, we've invested $1 billion into that facility. And but that is what enabled us to increase the pumping percentage, the basin, the BPP, the basin pumping percentage, which in fact saves the producers money because then it offsets imported supplies they would normally have to buy from Metropolitan. So if you do the math on it, we've actually saved the producers a tremendous amount of money by investing in the recycling facility. So you got to kind of look at it that way, that although the replenishment assessment has increased, the basin pumping percentage has increased significantly. It was down in the low 70s when I arrived here 25 years ago, and now it's at 85%. So that's a huge savings for our customers. So that's has offset it. Okay, is there any other input on this item from the board? Then I will close the public hearing, and I will ask to entertain a motion.
Move it.
Second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
Roll call. Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Sheldon? Yes. Director Tran? Yes. Director Wygant? Okay, that motion carries with 7 yes votes, with Directors Jung, Nguyen, and Yeo absent.
Great. That brings us to the consent calendar, which consists of items 2 through 27. I'm going to pull item 5. Are there any other items that anyone wants to pull? Or
move all but 5.
Okay, we have a motion for a second for the balance. Madam Clerk, if you'll call the roll.
Roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran? Director Wygant?
Yes.
That motion carries with 7 yes votes, with Directors Jung, Nguyen, and Yeo absent.
Great. So on item number 5, one of the bills, which is AB 794, You'll notice on the agenda, it recommends that we take a watch position. That was the position that was recommended from the Communications and Legislative Committee. In the intervening time between that meeting and this meeting, the bill started moving through committee. And in our rules of procedure, the general manager and president of the board can change the position and then bring it to the board subsequently. Myself and Mr. Kennedy were in Sacramento, and our advocates in Sacramento advised us that walking around the Capitol building with a letter that says we're watching a bill was not going to be very effective. We needed to take a position on it. So the staff was kind enough to compose a letter in which we've taken an opposed position. So the recommended action now is actually to oppose the bill. And the letter is in front of you this evening. This bill, just so you know, what this bill would do is it would usurp the US EPA's regulatory scheme on PFAS. Currently, the EPA has given us 5 years to put in wellhead treatment. And what this bill would do is it would give us 1 year, which is not even feasible. We don't have the money, nor would the vendors have the equipment to do that. So we're just opposed to the bill. It's just a bad idea. And from what I gather, I think it's a reaction to the current administration in the White House and concerns about maybe the EPA. So that's the kind of the background on the bill. And so I'm recommending that we oppose the bill, and I'll make a motion to that effect for the balance of the item. Okay, we have a motion and a second. If you'll call the roll, please.
Roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Okay, that motion also carries with 7 yes votes, with Directors Jung, Nguyen, and Yeo absent.
Great, that brings us to item number 28, which is a PFAS update.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Chris Olson will lead off this update on PFAS, talking about our treatment program. And then at the end, I just have a brief update on state and federal regulations.
All right, thanks. So it's been a little while. I think it's probably been about 5 months since we've done an update on this, and it's mostly because hasn't been a lot of changes going on. Here's that round one bar chart I've been showing for quite some time. We still have 45 wells operational of the original 62 in round one, 13 in construction, 4 in design. So what we have remaining for the design is 1 for Golden State, 1 for Fullerton, and 2 for Orange. And then in construction right now, there's Garden Grove, Fullerton, 3 in Santa Ana, 4 in Tustin, and 4 in Orange. And I'm showing this because end of this month, likely end of April, so in just in about a month and a half from now, the Tustin main plant and those 4 Orange sites will be operational. And then the next time you see it, it should look like this, which to me, getting over that 50 is pretty significant. We're really close to the full 62. So I want to show that. And what I'm going to do is just kind of walk through those ones that are still in construction, just a few slides to see what the status is of the pictures and the well sites themselves. So we'll start off with Orange. So Orange has the second phase, which is wells 20, 21, and 22, which is OCWD-led contract. And then they're also doing their own well number 28, which is a city-led contract. And that's because that was a new well that was drilled and equipped, and then the PFAS treatment was developed and installed with that well equipping project. So just showing a few slides, well 20, this is the one that's over by the Santa Ana River. It's a single system. You can see looking pretty complete there. Well 21, similar. The nice part is you can get to a point where if you have all your electrical and all your components are ready to go, you don't have to have things like paving or final fencing done. You can get the resin loaded and get it operational. And then similarly over at well 22, it's a single system site over here. Now, what's kind of unique about the well 28, this one is recessed and also has some high walls around it because it's next to a couple of residents, a business, and it's right on the main street. So there's a lot going on there, and they chose to hide it, and it's turning out to look really good over there. Like I said, also end of April timeframe for this one. Over at Tustin, that's the four wells that all pipe to the main plant treatment system. And this one's in the home stretch. It's been going on for quite some time. They're just wrapping up some electrical, get some electrical equipment installed and operational. Here's what that site looks like. It's four systems for all four of those wells. And then over at Santa Ana, where they already have one operational, that's number 40, and then they have three sites for four wells that are under construction right now. But what's in the first round are Santa Ana 31, and I was just going through some previous slide decks, and this was a rendering that I had showed you all like a year ago, and so now we can see here's where it's at today. So well 31, it's still a ways off. It's going to be about a year from now before this one's operational. Santa Ana wells 27, 28. This is two wells, and the treatment system's going to be at the one site over by the 27 well. And this one's going to be more like end of 2026 before it becomes operational. Shifting gears over to the round two, this is the MCL impacted wells, 40 of them, 10 in planning. We have a big effort going on with design. A lot of these designs won't be ready for bidding until end of the summer, fall, end of the year timeframes, all kind of staggered out. And then there's the one in construction, and that's the Santa Ana well 38. And I've mentioned it before, that's because they proactively started this one because they knew it was an important well to them because it feeds water to their higher pressure zone. So this one's very close. They actually had to demobilize and come back because they were waiting for some electrical gear to come in. Well, it's in the process that they've remobilized and looking at, we're crossing our fingers for end of May to be operational. Good news is it should be operational for them prior to the summer months. And grant efforts. So here's that pie that we've shown before. It just summarizes all the different pieces of that pie. We've got our PAYGO, the emerging contaminant grants, the WIFIA loan, federal spending, the earmarks, the Prop 1, and then the USBR. And I'm just going to go through those slides in a little bit more detail. Y'all have seen this one before. We are updating it as we go, see where the next steps are, where the grant funding agreements have been executed. But the big thing you'll notice here is we actually got money coming in. So Fullerton received the check for the $3.628 million. And the way this works is our staff is preparing these applications and submitting them on behalf of the cities. The city is the one who receives the check. So what we do is we invoice them, please give us the money that you've received, and that's how it works, right? So that one has happened. They actually did receive the check. And then these other four are expected anytime between now and June 30th to receive these checks for these sites. So great news. We're actually getting money coming in. We're real happy about that. This is the more 2024 intended use plan list for the emerging contaminant principal forgiveness. So these are just in the process of doing the applications and getting it dialed in. The first four there are the 24 list, and then the numbers 14 and 15 are on the 2025 list. And then the big green, the 30 million, that's the USBR that we got for the 30 million. And that's why all those items were on the consent calendar today as in preparation to move forward with this $30 million grant with the USBR. Now, one thing that's happened recently with those earmarks, that 24 earmark with Kim is locked in, but we did have the House and Senate pass that resolution for there's no 2025 earmarks. So that 1 million and the 1.105 are now off the table. However, we have done some submittals, some applications for future 2026, $5 million request to Congressmember Kim, a $5 million request to Congressman Correa from Santa Ana. And then Alicia tells me that she's also applying to Tran, Min, Padilla, and Schiff, all of them for $5 million each. So trying to make up for that. We have a lot of the grand total is a very large pot, and if we can get majority of that, we'll be in great shape. We're going to shift to regulatory, but I'll take a pause there if anyone had any questions on projects or grants.
Any questions? Is it, will Mayor Jung be bringing us the check in person at the next meeting? Let's hope so. Okay, please proceed.
Okay, and Jason's going to go through these.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Just a couple short updates on the state and federal side. Do you want to mention that the State Board's Division of Drinking Water has communicated that they intend to to lower some of the PFAS notification and response levels we've been working on over the past several years. They started speaking about this last month. They're desiring some consistency with these advisories with EPA's MCLs as sort of an interim measure before they actually adopt the MCLs and would enforce them on that 5-year timeframe. So as shown in the slide here, they're proposing to lower the notification levels for PFOA and PFOS to 4 nanograms per liter, consistent with the US EPA MCL. And then the response level, which is that threshold at which the state does not recommend the source be served to the public, they would lower that to 10 nanograms per liter for PFHXS, again, to be consistent with the federal MCL. And so if we go to the next slide here in terms of timing of this, Christine, go back one. You know, the state really just started talking about this last month when they were when the state board staff was speaking to the state board on February 19th. They made mention of this. We anticipate a more complete overview coming at the state board this spring, per Assembly Bill 2560 that we actually helped sponsor several years ago. The state actually has to provide 30 days public notice of these types of changes. It used to be they could kind of just do this in a vacuum administratively. They now have to get formal notice. And so, you know, looking at the state board's calendar, they're getting close to not being able to do this in April and provide that 30-day notice. So it's looking like this, the earliest this could go into effect would be May. So keeping close track of that, communicating that to the producers so they would understand their obligations under these new levels. The summary of the impacts here, we don't anticipate the impacts being very significant here. There are a few producers that lower notification level may cause one of their wells to require a governing body notification. All these producers have done these before with their councils or with the county board of supervisors if they need to. So they have experience doing this. We'll support them to the extent they need to do it. And then for the response level, that's the one that's a little more strict in terms of deciding whether to continue serving the source or not. We've identified 4 wells in Anaheim, Orange, and Garden Grove, which would be affected based on their PFHX levels we've documented through the testing we've done. And so if those producers continue to follow the response level and follow the state's recommendation, that would cause 4 currently operating wells to come offline. These wells are otherwise in our long-term program for compliance with the federal MCL, so we have treatment planned for them already. They would just need to be shut off a little sooner, maybe the week. And again, we've communicated that to these producers so that state board go ahead and make these changes later this year. Next one, Chris. And then just one probably just real short update on the federal MCL. I think as the board is aware, a couple of our professional associations, AM1 AWDA, filed a petition for legal review on this last year within the 45-day period after the rule was finalized by EPA. This fall was kind of spent in the briefing stage of this, exchanging briefs on the matter from AWDA and from EPA, and also some amicus briefs early this year. All this occurred under the prior administration. And so when the new administration came into EPA last month, they requested a 60-day advance so they could come up to speed with the particulars of the trial and I think decide how they were going to handle defending the law, perhaps. U.S. Court of Appeals in the D.C. Circuit, which hears this, granted that 60-day advance. And so they won't be back in court until April, the 8th of April. And at that time, the government and the petitioners will need to agree on what they're going to do going forward, what that briefing schedule looks like. If they just kind of hop back on the train they're on before, AM1 AWDA would be up with a response brief. But we really don't know until they appear in front of the court again how this is going to be handled, what the new Department of Justice, what the new EPA leadership is going to do. So more to come on this. As soon as we find out the course of action they're taking, we will update the board. Hopefully sometime in April. That concludes my update. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Yes.
That won't affect the state notification levels, though, will it?
It will not. And I think, Director, in my sense, it's the state was moving forward those kind of independently as that interim measure. I don't think the current administration is influencing that.
Yes.
Go ahead, Darren.
I was just going to say, us as well in those notifications? I'm the producer.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Director Wigan. The letter comes from the producer, but we have we typically assist with them and provide some content in terms of the monitoring results and the summary of the actions we're taking in the basin and our treatment program and give it some context. And so so the recipient understands, you know, kind of this, yeah, this one well is over this level, but here's everything we're doing together, both the producer and OCWD. So yeah, we've worked on those letters before with them and have good courses.
I have a question chronologically to tag on Director Wigan's question on notification. I believe on the 10 wells, right, that may be affected. What's the next steps in terms of remediation and cost, and then the interaction also with the regulatory agencies, the feds?
Well, yeah.
What are we looking at?
Yeah, so the ones that require notification, it's just that, just those local governing councils need to be notified. The water can still continue to be served. But given that threshold, that new threshold is the same as the federal enforceable level, we're currently on course to become under requirements for by 2029. Those wells are already in our costing and project management for the long-term second phase of our treatment. But we have estimated costs for that. There's, as Chris mentioned, there's design work going on right now to be prepared to, in the future, to potentially recommend to the board to have those be constructed.
Any wells being offline or shut off for the time being?
Yeah, just compared to today, just those four additional ones in Anaheim, Garden Grove, and Orange that would fall under this new response level for that one chemical.
Okay, any more questions? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. First, just for Jeremy, would the EPA ever attempt to occupy the field on this, on the regulations of the MCLs?
A great question, Director Sheldon. The briefing schedule was kind of a funny one here, and the timing was couldn't have been any weirder, because EPA submitted their brief in December. New administration comes in January. So pretty good chance that if you'd waited a month for EPA to submit a brief, it was probably a pretty different brief. Now you have a final rule. It's being challenged. You have an administration that might have some very different views as to what the outcome of that challenge might be. So it's not surprising that EPA and the Trump Justice Department asked for time to evaluate. We don't know what comes out of that, but they would have to actually ask to maybe rebrief. That's a possibility. A settlement with some of the challengers, that's a possibility. You know, we don't have that insider information. It'd be good information to have, and I think we'll learn more over the next few weeks. But as of right now, we don't know what position the EPA Director Zeldin is going to have to learn about it and then apprise the board as soon as we do. But it's possible the MCL could be modified. So what makes it harder to do that is it's already final. It would have to be in some kind of an accommodation based on the fact that there's a currently pending challenge to the rule.
As the Director Green's question, would that have any residual effect on California?
Well, I mean, it would, because right now California doesn't have a pending MCL. We have those proposed changes lowering the RL, which, you know, we've talked about that being kind of de facto MCL, because the consequences of not complying are draconian, right? So California, that's strictly California law. So they can do the RL, they can do the NL. Those are both state law requirements. But an MCL, that's a federal, I mean, that it can be done under state law, but it's implementing the Safe Drinking Water Act. And so if EPA, if something happens to the EPA MCL, California would have to, they'd have to act to do a different MCL, more stringent than what EPA is going to do.
So if the federal government were to withdraw what the previous administration had done, wouldn't that have an effect upon California?
Yes. It would require, if they want to do an MCL, they'd have to do their own process.
Thank you. So, Jason, questions for you are, correct me if my recollection is incorrect. When Dr. Barnett was here, he spoke, he average that generally the amount of, I'll say, PFAS in our bodies has gone down from 25 parts per trillion. And however, the PFAS in our water could be higher, but in our body, it's overall lower. And I think we all, those that got tested, and well, those that were tested in the study that was done by Dr. Barnett, generally, what number did those average numbers come in at?
Yeah, I think in the Orange County study, the data he shared with us, I think the average average participant in that study had a value about sort of on the order of like 2 to 3 value that they saw.
Mine came in quite lower, and I've actually done some research, found out maybe there's some B6 or B12 that may have helped that out that I didn't know that at the time, but it did is what I saw study on. So with that said, back to the what's in our body doesn't translate to what's in the, or what's in the river doesn't translate to what's in our body. What's in the water doesn't translate to what's in our body, right? That's what it seems to me.
Sure. Yeah. It all depends based on the work of Dr. Pennell. I think it all depends on what your exposure history is, right? Are you drinking water that's been impacted by the river? Do you have other exposures in your home, in your daily life? It really
the
depends
McDonald's,
on
McDonald's, the French fry wrapper McDonald's. So is there science that explains this difference?
My hope is when Dr. Patel concludes that study, they will be able to shed some light upon that when maybe they see this amount in the water here in Orange County, yet these other results in participants such as yourself, study will have some findings about that. Why maybe they're not seeing the same correlation here in Orange County that they have seen in other communities.
Does the state have anything, any information that they promulgated regarding the amount of PFAS in the body in California? Like, is there just in the water?
My understanding is the state has done some isolated blood serum testing around the state over the last decade, a little bit in San Diego, a small study in Orange County before Dr. Bartel's work. So they've done a little bit of surveying. That I don't believe they're really using that to underpin any of the state advisories.
What I'm getting at is what Director Tran raises, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars, over $1 billion over, you know, a few decades on this remediation, which doesn't appear that the science has looked at what's in the water versus what's in our body. And what is that harmful? That we have lots of bad things in our body. They may not be at harmful levels. And I probably have a lot of harmful things in my body from what I consume. So we're not yet the state. Have we asked the state to come up with any of this information to draw that information gap? I think it's a gap of, you know, what we're being asked to do to the water, but what's really matters is what's inside the body. And because we're all concerned about health, and is that really a health problem? If our parts per trillion is significantly less than what's in than at a river.
Right. Yeah, I think you'd have to engage a state on taking sort of a different approach to that kind of risk assessment than they traditionally do, right? They traditionally assume this much is in the water. We assume you drink 2 liters a day of it, and therefore that's going to be your exposure, right? That's sort of their baseline assumption to keep back water supplies. And so you would have to take into account some of the things you're suggesting. You'd have to get them to take kind of a different approach.
Are the questions I'm raising legitimate questions?
Yeah. Yes. Sure. From the board's policy standpoint, absolutely.
I think the board, I mean, we have hundreds of millions of dollars we're spending. I think that I would like to see this board start asking some of these questions that we're asking and ask for science and more data on this as we lots and lots of money. pleasure. If any colleagues share that, please speak up. And that's a thoughtful way to go about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have any questions on this item? Thank you, Mr. Olson. That'll bring us to item 29, which is the SAPA update. SAPA did meet. The big item was the agenda's in the packet. We considered the annual budget. The headcount is staying consistent at 28 people. And there is an extensive review of the budget that'll be voted on in a subsequent meeting. That brings us to item number 30, which is the water resources report.
President Bildo, the report and information are in the packet.
Great. That brings us to committee conference meeting reports. The Property Management Committee, Chair Sheldon.
We had a robust and active committee meeting, and that report is
fantastic. Communications and Legislative Committee, Chair Tran. Water Issues Committee, Chair Green.
Reports in the packet.
And the Admin and Finance Issues Committee, Chairman Yeo, who I believe was online. Okay. Who's the vice chair? Let's look. Let's give it a look. That'd be Mayor Amesqua as the vice chair.
Yes, thank you. It's included in the packet.
Fantastic. Thank you for your report. Are there any reports on committees, conferences, or meetings attended at district expense at which a quorum of the board was present? No. Okay. Verbal reports. Presence report. I believe I previously mentioned that myself and Mr. Kennedy and staff went to Sacramento, and we were able to meet, make contact with all of our legislators or their staff, and also provided them our legislative platform, and in particular, brief them on our challenges with PFAS and the need for more state funding. General Manager's report.
Yeah, President Bilder, just a brief update on the recent storms we have. In the month of March, so far we received 1.8 inches of rain. The water year total is a little over 6.25 inches. That's about half what we usually have in an average year by this time. That's usually closer to 12. So still, even with the recent rain, and overall a dry year for us. Maintaining a pool behind Prado Dam, as of this morning, the elevation was at elevation 498. So roughly 10,000 acre feet of water stored behind the dam. Release rate this morning was about 600 CFS. We anticipate bringing that down tomorrow as our basins are getting full, and that would allow us to not have to pump the water for Santiago, save a little bit of the energy cost there. And also we want to be able to dry that facility out over the summer for some plant construction work. So we'll be getting less water out of the dam. Anticipate under that schedule, we should have the pool drained by early May. And certainly if the weather changes, you know, no storms on the outlook, but if things change, we can certainly alter that operation to drain it more quickly if we need to. That's the plan going forward.
Great. Are there any directors' reports?
I mentioned in the ComLedge committee meeting, but Executive Director Haney took several of us up to on, what was that, a week ago at Corona Airport. The EcoFlight provided a free tour of the Santa Ana watershed. And Lisa gave a great tour for three separate groups. Our general manager did the early one, and then I did the later one, but we kind of went in between two storms. And so we got a chance to see Prado full of some water, not completely full, but it was interesting for a rookie like me on the water stuff. So I got a good tour. We went all the way up to Seven Oaks, and then we came all the way to the coast. So a guest that I brought was Assemblymember Dixon's district director, who's acting chief of staff right now. So her interest is in sediment, and so we got an opportunity to see a whole bunch of sediment that was is lingering around there. So there's a lot of mindset floating around. We had some agencies out there. We had some producers out there. So it was a free tour. It was a small six-seat Cessna, and I was a little nervous getting into it. It still had ashtrays in the armrest, so I was concerned it was a little dated, but it was a smooth flight, and It was a good opportunity to see, and Lisa did a great job of explaining the watershed, so I appreciated that.
Mm. Great.
Newport City Hall might have.
Any other reports from directors? Okay, hearing none. General counsel report.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We do have two closed sessions, both of them related. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 in the case of OCW versus SABIC and OCW versus Sanmina, both of which are part of the South Basin litigation, recommend at this time recess to closed session.
Okay, at this time we'll recess.
Hey, Rick, really good. We return from closed session in the two listed closed items on the agenda, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9 A and D. There's a settlement, final settlement that I need to word out as a reportable item. Settlement was reached between OCWD and Radio Shack. Settlement for the material terms, $1.2 million in exchange for lease from dismissal of Radio Shack case. And the board approved unanimously with those directors present, voting in the affirmative to approve the settlement. Yo, Sheldon, Wygan, Bilodeau, Meeks, Tran, and Green all voting to approve the settlement. And the other directors absent. That's nothing further.
With that, the meeting is adjourned.